news I gained just yesterday dismayed all that I learned. The emptiness of life examined, time can't be returned.
Well, hello out there, and welcome to another episode of Things I Learned While Learning Other Things. This is an attempt by me, Joe Morahan, and my brother J.S. to provide you with a series of interesting, informative, educational, and yeah, we hope even enjoyable stories that will help you navigate through those high seas of life. And we thank you for joining us today in our 255th podcast. We've been talking about utopia, specifically Thomas More's version of utopia. And he's proving to us, well, it's very, very hard to envision a utopia. He's given us a number of concepts that he wants incorporated into his perfect society. But what else is there in More's blueprint for the perfect society that we have yet to cover? Well, every member of Thomas More's utopia would be provided adequate food, clothing, as long as it would be colorless. I mean, this, you know, foretells of the paradise that is the hermit kingdom of Kim Jong-un's North Korea. Adequate, but everywhere identical housing, equal education, and access to appropriate medical treatment. Very American egalitarian ideas these days. Now, and it does sound a bit like, you know, Michael Moore's Castro Cuba or 20th century healthcare in England as provided by the NHS. I mean, and who might argue or complain about this? Well, except for, of course, Cubans who in the year 2024 find that $234 monthly paychecks just aren't sufficient to buy anything but bare necessities in their communist isle of utopia. And the Brits, well, they know full well that they may lay in a hospital in a hallway for 2 days before being seen by a medical doctor, or wait 2, 3, 4 years for that hip replacement. God save the king. And Thomas More would require citizens, they work only 6-hour work days. Now we're modeling modern Greece, where having a few smokes at the local cafe while nursing a strong cup of coffee with compadres for, say, 3 or 4 hours each morning, while Germans are working 70 hours a week to pay for Greek pensions that kick in at age 55. Well, I digress. But no, let me continue. This daily regimen that Greeks have grown so used to, I mean, and why not? You know, that and avoiding paying taxes is an art form that the Greeks have mastered. And it is quite a lifestyle, it's got to be admitted. A truly fine and good gig, if you think about it. And it's a tradition to be maintained at all costs. Well, provided the Germans don't get really pissed off about all this and invade the country, well, as they are wont to do. But in More's utopia, this minimal work regimen does come at a stiff cost. And it was readily apparent to Thomas More, who, as he said himself, you know, he had admitted that he'd been quite troubling to heretics, but More appeared to have absorbed at least a bit of economics along the way. For even as he structured a perfect society, he recognized that a 6-hour workday was problematic in that it would result in severe shortages of even basic necessities. And there was simply no way to avoid this. Less work, less stuff. Simple as that. His utopian design would result in unavoidable sacrifice, severe diminishment in the supply of consumer goods. You know, heavy casualties to be endured in the trade for the increased frivolities available under a utopian existence. And even in utopia, all wants cannot be satisfied. Of this, Thomas More was clear. No matter what a politician might promise, it was not going to happen. But, you know, even, and as with all planned economies in all of history, for the greater good, people would just have to adjust, have to accept the inevitable unavailability, the shortage of certain desirable products in favor of bare necessities. For this, we just need think only of Eastern Germany. East Germany. Thus, it was that not even in his dreams could Thomas More envision a perfect society in which all desires of all the peoples would be fulfilled. Imagine the paradise that was Soviet Russia, Lenin, Stalin. You know, think Hugo Chavez's Venezuela. You know, like Steven Tyler, the white trash version of Mick Jagger and Aerosmith, Thomas More, he would have to just dream on. Personal liberties, as in the U.S., post the passage of the Patriot Act, would have to be restricted in paradise. Whoa, travel within utopia? Well, between the various villages, it would not be allowed. Well, it would be allowed, but only after a resident had applied for and had been issued by the appropriate authorities an internal passport to travel from village to village. And this is utopia. The administration of utopia had a need to know where all of its citizens might be at any and all moments in time. Citizens, one's neighbors in utopia would receive instructions from the authorities in utopia as to just how to best keep an eye on and report on each other at all times. George Orwell might have found his big brother lurking in the pages of Thomas More's Utopia. Ernst Mielke and his feared Stasi agents whom terrorized East Germans for nearly half a century. He might have been scrutinizing Thomas More's Utopia for tips on how best to locate and police any and all wandering residents. And you know, Jeremy Bentham, the British philosopher whom wrote of the power of the opticon to maximize behavioral control of citizenry, he had written that order is best achieved and maintained when everyone knows they are being watched all the time by authorities. Individual privacy rights were always to be at risk in the face of the perceived need for enhanced security measures. I mean, in this utopia, we now are talking about like modern Singapore, right? Yeah. Oh, something for the modern feminists. Modern feminists need be aware that things aren't so bad in 2024, unless you're in a strict Islamic nation. Question, which Islamic nation isn't strict? Well, define strict. Anyway, in More's utopia of 508 years ago, no less than once a month, a wife would be required to kneel down in front of her husband and confess all of her sins, committed, dreamed of, thought about, as well as to report all her omissions as well. Post said confession, the wife must then beg, must plead for forgiveness from her husband, presumably operating as Don Henley suggested when he is saying it's about forgiveness, even if he or she might not love the other anymore, the husband would grant it. I mean, this humbling practice is to be promoted in Utopia in order to rid the marriage of small aggravations, misunderstandings, grievances, allowing the marriage to remain as healthy and as free of baggage as would be possible. You know, it's kind of a forerunner of the Rolling Stones singing about the joys of her being under my thumb, a squirmy dog, and all that. You know, so interesting, at least to me, even telling perhaps, is that Thomas More did not suggest that it was required, not in his utopia anyway, that these midnight confessions, as the grassroots called them, you know, nearly 500 years later, that these required monthly confessions ran in both directions. In other words, it was only a one-way street, wife to husband only, like radio to nowhere, Bruce Springsteen style. It was sufficient for the benefit of the marriage that the wife and the wife alone upchucked her indiscretions, misdeeds, and omissions. But then, you know, in Moore's utopia, as is always the case in cults, creations of perfect societies and the establishment of utopias over the millennia, the treatment of sexual relations always warrants special, serious perusal. And Thomas More was not unlike other utopians in thinking through sexual relations. Thomas More, as one would expect of a man whom always, you know, brought the wood to affairs, he does not disappoint here in his utopia, beginning with premarital sex. Now, this is, as he sees it, a big effing problem. You know, as Jerry Falwell and the likes of, say, Reverend Ted Haggard, as they suggested, some sex just cannot be overlooked. It cannot be tolerated, condoned, or left unpunished. No, it cannot. It would be treated. In Moore's utopia, premarital intercourse, this was a big problem. Now, hold on. It warrants compulsory celibacy for life. Whoa. You know, take thee to a nunnery. Adultery. I mean, no one today, you know, suggests that adultery, no one suggests it's a good thing. It does tend to break down trust in toto, does it not? And the cuckolded spouse is shamed forever, and the deceiving adulterer shares the spousal disgrace in secret with in secret enjoyment with the adulterous lover, further humiliating the deceived spouse. This is not a good thing. It's not. And Moore's prescribed penalty for adultery? Slavery. Slavery. Now that's strong stuff here in Utopia, but then given those naked inspection privileges before marriage commitments were made, finding fault with the severity of punishment, of the nature of slavery, might be diminished to a certain extent because one knew what he or she was getting before they joined in matrimony. So betrayal is a bitch and will be treated as such. You know, I mean, this is off the main point, but it is worthy of note in 2024, the year 2024. That, to note that skin color has nothing to do with the transgressor, the meting out of punishment, nor of slavery itself. But most educated people already know that this is true and has always been the case dating back as long as written language has existed. Color is not associated with slavery. Now, persistent slavery? In Thomas More's Utopia, very British, the death penalty is imposed. Whoa, that solves the problem of adultery, doesn't it? I think it goes without saying that Thomas More's perfect society was not of a nature that, say, Lyndon Baines Johnson was trying to achieve, not even close. As St. Thomas More's version was built more upon the notion that to break the rules is eternal hellfire and brimstone. Yes, this is strong stuff here. Like, move over shallow water, high tide is rolling in. And perhaps on that everlasting condemnation, let us break here, because Thomas More has so much more to provide us to contemplate in that perfect society. Utopia, no doubt, has always had and will always have its complexities. So let us finish today with some of Thomas More's own writing. It's wrong to deprive someone else of a pleasure so that you can enjoy one yourself. But to deprive yourself of a pleasure so that you can add to someone else's enjoyment, now that's an act of humanity by which you always gain more than you lose. Hey, thanks, Thomas, for sharing that. But you might, have meant well in your writings, but as is often the case with religious fanatics, he seems to have lost sight of this insight, this concept, while whipping non-believers and heretics in his basement. I mean, this is so easy to do when one is overtaken by emotion. So, hey, thanks for listening. And we will be back with more of Thomas More in our next episodic adventure story. Hey, thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
I look to the stars, there's none I can see.
I'm afraid fate she has answered me. Only moments my story will end. There was a story I wanted to send. Oh, how I dream for the calm of the sea. A beautiful face smiling back at me. The sea is boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas.